Hey guys, don't forget to check out the Street Cop Training Conference 2023, April 23rd through the 28th, Nashville, Tennessee. The Gaylord at Opry, what a center, what a place. We have amazing speakers, amazing training, five of the most impactful days of your career. Check it out at streetcop.com. You do not want to miss out. There is a room code available for a discounted room. Sign up now at streetcop.com. 111-110.
Street Cop.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. Your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and today I have with me a very special guest. I've been looking forward to this one for a while, but the last time he got a little sick, but he's here now. A lot of you are familiar with him from his social media presence. I believe the country looks up to this gentleman as a, maybe we all wish we had a boss like you kind of feel in a time where it seems like leadership and having some kind of spine to stand up to the press seems to sometimes be lack thereof. You are certainly in a category of your own, along with a handful of other sheriffs and law enforcement leaders in this world, and none other than Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Brevard County Sheriff's Office. And I can't thank you enough for being here.
No, man, it's my pleasure. Just thanks for having me today. And you know, man, you said a lot in a very short time there about what we need from leaders today in law enforcement. We're at a juncture in our country where we've never been before. We're at a juncture when we need sheriffs and chiefs of police to stand up and do what I say all the time, and that is protect our three C's, our citizens, our cops, and our Constitution. And some of them have forgotten where they came from, forgotten what it's like to be one of these men and women out there on that street that are having to interact with sometimes the worst of the worst. And I told everybody, I ever get the chance to lead an agency, I'm going to say and do what needs to be said and done to protect those three C's.
You know, and I think you strike a chord with a lot of people at this time in our country's history, where I think the world is a little fed up with the left's agenda and what they're trying to do to villainize law enforcement.
Well, there's no doubt. You know, if you look at what's happened over the course of the past couple of years, you saw a group that tried to run defund the police up the flagpole. That absolutely got no wind. The couple of places that did buy into the insanity of that have now recognized the error of their ways, but it's too late. You can't put that bullet back in the gun. You've just destroyed the image of law enforcement in your community. You've told people you don't need it, and now all of a sudden you do need it. But the law enforcement officers have left to go to places where they can be law enforcement officers and they can do their job. So, you know, that defund the police movement, while they tried to push it and the media did everything they could to hype it and make it look like it was palatable, it fell, and it fell on its face. What's taken a good toll, though, unfortunately, is the defame the police movement. That's a different angle where they've tried to tarnish the badges of law enforcement officers. They've tried to use the examples of one or two bad law enforcement officers to target thousands and thousands of law enforcement officers across the country. And unfortunately, there's a lot of leaders out there or I guess a lot of people with the stars on their collar. I can't really call them leaders, but there's a lot of them out there that have forgotten what they're supposed to be doing.
When I teach a class, and I'm going to go off of this right off the bat, I commonly refer to yourself and some other sheriffs in Florida. And I say, you know, when you look at what we need, you watch the media, they go right to the people they know that they're going to fold like a cheap chair and they're giving the answers they want. But then you watch them go to these guys in Florida, and as soon as they fire back, the media folds like a cheap chair and walks away. So clearly, as an intelligent person, we know what the resolution is. What they'll do is continue to avoid people like you and continue to find the weak leaders who will fold and there's no secret to who they are. They come on the news and social media and push a political agenda. And the worst thing is when a police officer loses their life, they're pushing their own political agenda. And that's, to me, that's just a disgusting thing. Would you agree with that?
Well, I'm going to disagree with it, but only to one point. You said they fold. I don't think fold's the right word. I think they conform. They cave. They, you know, you can pick any number of words there, but all of them are going to have the word weakness somewhere in the definition. And You know, one of the best things that me and some of the other law enforcement leaders that you're speaking of, especially here in Florida, have done is we've realized we don't need the media to communicate with our citizens. We have you know, things like you and I are doing right now that allow us to directly communicate with our citizens. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Let's bring your son to work day. I told him to. So his, hey, buddy, the rest of the kids went to the beach. Man. He had an ear infection, so I bring him to the doctor first.
There you go. So, if you look at our social media outreach, and clearly social media is, without question, social media is community policing of this century. It is the ability for us to talk directly to our citizens. And so if you look at, for example, our local newspaper here that absolutely hates my guts, and if they run a story that says I did it wrong, I celebrate because I know I did it exactly right. But if you look at them on their social media outreach, and then you look at our social media outreach, we clobber them. They're not even close to us. I can reach more of our citizens through posting something on our sheriff's office Facebook page or on the Sheriff Wayne Ivey page or on the constitutional Sheriff Ivey page that far outreaches them. So we have the ability now to directly connect and communicate with our citizens to tell them the truth about what happened. The second thing is calling them out when they lie. We have a show that we do on our Facebook page. Thankfully, we haven't had to do it in a while. The last one was pretty pretty robust and stern, and I think put them in their place. But we have a show that we do called Truth Be Told. If the media lies on me or our deputies, I call them out. I show the citizens how they lied and how just, you know, spiteful they are. And I want to say this, Dennis. It's just like anything else in any profession. It's a small group that gives media a bad name. There's a lot of good reporters out there that have a 30-second window to tell the citizens what happened. They're not agenda-driven. They're not anything. They're running from call to call, just like we do, trying to do their jobs. I got no problem with them. In fact, I bend over backwards to go meet with them. But when you're agenda-driven, when you're the Florida Today that's in my area or a Gannett-based paper, the USA Today, and your agenda is to trash law enforcement officers, I got zero use for you, and I'm going to do everything I can to show people you're a liar.
How do you believe the community receives Sheriff Wayne Ivey through the social media networks? Do you feel like they really appreciate you standing up and doing what you do?
Oh, my goodness. It's amazing, the comments, the support, the emails that we get, the personal messages, just the comments overall. Yeah, perfect example. Two nights ago, I posted up a video that told our citizens we were looking for two people that were wanted for animal abuse, animal cruelty. Within 5 hours, we had gotten tips on where they were at, and I was walking them into the Brevard County Jail. I walked them in live on Facebook. To give you an idea, the last time I looked, that video had reached 150,000 plus people. It had over 2,000 comments, all of which were bravo. This is the kind of, you know, law enforcement we need. You know, you're always going to have the naysayers. They're a small number in that regard. But at the end of the day, our citizens are able to see exactly what we're doing.
How do you think that makes the deputies that work for you feel, all your personnel?
Yeah, so I can tell you that our deputies love the fact that I stand up for them. Now, listen, you've been in this business just like I have. The other thing the deputies appreciate is that if somebody doesn't do it right, I hold them accountable. I always tell people that I manage by standing around. I stand behind my people when they need a good, swift kick in their butt. I stand beside them in the trenches when they're working. I stand in front of them if somebody's taking a shot at them. Other than that, I stand back and I watch them do amazing stuff. So my team knows I'm going to stand up for them. And if they did it wrong, I'm going to get on them, but nobody else is going to trash them. We're not going to have that. We police our own, but at the same time, we have a tough job to do out here. And these men and women know that I stand up for them. They know that they have a community. That's the other thing. Through our social engagement in the community, we've been able to give information to our citizens that have made them our partners. They're the number one stakeholders in lowering the crime rate, keeping the community safe. So when you're working with them, providing them education and awareness on crime trends, everything else, what you do is you take an agency like ours that's 1,700. We have a force multiplier now of 600,000 because we have 600,000 citizens that are all moving in the same direction with us for one common mission. protect this community. Here's the other funny part too, on our social media. If somebody goes on and trashes one of our deputies or is on there talking that what we did is not right, I literally feel sorry for them because our citizens light them up. They they go on there and just basically browbeat them to the point where a lot of them delete their own comments. They're tired of getting pinged by the citizens. So I tell everybody, our citizens love us. They trust us and they protect us just as much as we protect them.
That's wonderful. I mean, you know, ideally this is a great situation for both sides of the coin. Now, knowing this and you having the national attention that you have, do you find that the people who are, I imagine you guys are getting out of state lateral transfers in, is the words you're saying, are they resonating with these men and women? That's why they're showing up saying, I want to work for you.
It absolutely is. One of the blessings that we have, you know, every law enforcement agency, if we go back to that defame the police movement and the impact it's had, every law enforcement agency is really focused on recruitment and retention. We're blessed to some degree, though, because a lot, as you said, law enforcement officers across the world, across the country, however, have seen what we're doing here. They see that they have a sheriff that stands up for them. They see that they have a sheriff and a community that applauds them for being tough on crime and tougher on criminals. They have a sheriff that lets them do their jobs of putting bad people in jail, and they have a community that supports them. So we are literally, one of the things we ask on our board is, why'd you pick us? There's 67 other sheriff's officers, 66 other sheriff's officers in the state of Florida, you know, hundreds of police agencies. Why us? And the number one question, or the number one answer we get, is I see what you do on social media. I see how you go after criminals, and I want to be able to do my job.
It's a good lead into my next question. What's your position on proactivity?
I can sum that up in one sentence. We target criminals before they target us.
I love it.
I make no apologies. We are the most aggressive law enforcement agency in the country. I tell our team when I swear them in that I want them to do four things. And it's the only four things I want them to do. I want them to come to work every day and have fun. If you're having fun, you will be successful. I've created and we try to strive to create an environment where our team can have fun coming to work. Number two, I want you to put bad people in jail. Number three, and the reason for number two is because that's what we get paid to do. Number three, I want you to do it more professionally than anyone else. And number four, I want you to go home safe at the end of every shift. If you do those four things as the agency head, I'll do everything else. I'll get you as many raises as I can. I will get you the equipment you need. I will make sure that you have the support you need. And I will brag to our community about what you're doing out there. And Dennis, somewhere in this conversation, you might say, well, does it work? Does having that kind of partnership with the community work? In the past 9 years that I've been sheriff, we've lowered our crime rate in Brevard County by 51%.
My hat's off to you. That's great. Yeah, of course it does. I mean, it's common sense. It's this.
It is.
And people start to engage in conversations with me, you know, regarding the state of affairs at times. They go, guys, you know, we're all on the same page. You're arguing what their position is. It just doesn't make any sense. And they don't even want to have a conversation as adults in a room to sit down and try to hear both sides of the story. They're just, you know, progressive and they're stuck in their beliefs. And unfortunately, the collateral damage is innocent people, the lives and livelihood and safety of the innocent public. And they continue to be victimized on some agenda that's pushed that the police are the problem. You know, when are we starting holding other people accountable?
Yeah, but I'm going to say this too in that regard. And a lot of times, you know, especially right now in the climate we're in this country, we talk about the left and we talk about the right. But this is what I will tell you. When you look at what the average citizen, doesn't matter what their party affiliation is. If you put 100 people in the room from all different party affiliations and you ask them, what is important to you? They would list out the same exact things. What's important? Them and their family being safe. Education for their children. Employment opportunities. Recreational opportunities. Health and well-being of pets. Those are the same exact things, regardless of political affiliation. So when you get past that average citizen, now you get to the extremist. And the extremists are a small, vocal group of ankle biters that are out there just churning up the water. And the average citizen goes through their day and sees a police officer or a deputy sheriff out here and thanks them for their time. You know, in our community, I can tell you, my deputies tell me they can barely pay for their meals anymore in a restaurant because the citizens, not one, but citizens are lined up two and three deep to anonymously pay for these brave men and women's meals out here. Restaurant owners are paying for their meal. I have a buddy of mine that's owned a restaurant for years. He called me up and he said, "Hey, Wayne, your deputies won't take free meals when I offer to them." I said, "Well, you know, we're not supposed to do that. We try and not, you know, avoid those things." And he said, "Hey, Wayne, we've been friends for a long time, but I don't tell you how to run the sheriff's office. Don't tell me how to run my restaurant." He says, "I want to buy their lunch. I want to buy their dinner. They're out here protecting me and my family." That's the model we have in Brevard County.
A lot of our training programs at this company are centered around proactivity and, you know, gaining more and more knowledge and education. As a matter of fact, I would consider us to be pioneers in this game a little bit, and I'll explain why as we go on. But typically, after somebody takes maybe my course, we have a course called Interdiction Mastermind, or we have something called the Gun Game. Wild. And this guy literally can show you how to get guns. And he always tells me, don't say that, but he's amazing. He's a lieutenant in Boston. What a guy, right? So I'll commonly get messages after people have had their eyes open and given a new perspective of what police looks like, police work looks like. You know, they're not grabbing a laser gun, and I'm not going to, you know, go neither here nor there about my feelings about things like that. But, and I'm saying, hey, look, there is just much more going on than you think there is. I know that you think this is what it looks like, but you can do this, and this is what we believe it looks like. Not too long ago, I had a guy write to me and said, "Man, I'm on fire. I'm killing it. I'm out here. I am locking people up. I'm getting some real bad people off the streets." And he said, "You know, my chief said, I'm a shit magnet. I always go out and I seem to always find trouble." And my response to him was, "If you are not finding trouble, what kind of cop are you? It is your job to find trouble." Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I have several of those magnets here in the sheriff's office, and I love them. You know, the greatest compliment I ever got from my supervisor was that exact same terminology you just used, was them telling me that I was that type of magnet. And man, that's a compliment. I was out there turning over every rock I could, looking behind every leaf I could for crime. I can remember when I was a patrol deputy years and years ago, one of my squad mates said, "Hey man, after 2 o'clock, hamper down, you know, turn the radio off. You know, we're not out." And I'm like, "Brother, I'm out here doing everything I can, you know, to do it." So I want my team to be aggressive. We started a new show, and I don't know if you've got a chance to watch it yet, but, you know, so many of our citizens are thirsty for seeing what our law enforcement officers are doing out here. Shows like Cops and Live PD really, you know, helped accentuate what we do, and people love that. They want to be part of it. They also want to know that their law enforcement officers are working to keep them safe, so that they can sleep in their beds at night and not worry about their children walking to and from school. So we started a program here called HIT. It's called Hit the Streets with Sheriff Wayne Ivey. We do it on our Facebook page, on our YouTube channel. I take about 30 of our deputies out a couple nights a week, and we look for our HIT is an acronym for high intensity target. We look for our areas where drug overdoses, drug sales, car thefts, violent crime, game activity, all of that stuff is taking place, and we saturate it, we flood it, and then we move to another part of the county. On most nights, we end up arresting anywhere from 9 to 15 people with that team. It's the equivalent of having 30 German Shepherds on a leash, and the leash breaks as soon as you leave the building. They are aggressive. They're after everybody. We've got canines out, everything. They're professional. They follow the law. We have our legal advisor out with us. My people know I expect them to be aggressive, but the most professional law enforcement officers. We don't want to lose cases in court. We don't want to have people, you know, think that we are harassing people that don't, you know, have any reason for an interaction with us. But at the end of the day, if you've got drugs, if you've got guns, if you, you know, illegal guns, if you've got drug paraphernalia, if you're doing things you shouldn't be doing, you're going to take the ride to jail. And we have zero tolerance for crime. If you spit on the sidewalk in Brevard County, you're going to take the ride to jail.
I've been an advocate 10 years ago when I started opening my mouth here after being a proactive police officer. And, you know, listen, I've made my share of mistakes. And certainly when I came out of the academy, I had no idea what the law said. And I make a lot of jokes about this. I said, when I left the academy, it's interesting. We marched so well, you thought it was a Marine Corps drill team for our 5-minute graduation. But I didn't know what to do when a car smelled like weed. So in 6 months, I knew how to swing a bag at a stick and scream, get back. But I didn't know what to do when a car smelled like weed. Nobody ever told me. So we had to go out and find these things, figure these things out ourselves. But then I started reading case laws. I was in a promotional testing course. And what I recognized is not only can this be done and be very effective, it can be constitutional as well. So people have this assumption that proactive police work doesn't go hand in hand with the Constitution. As a matter of fact, one of the people who tried to run interference for me here in the beginning, his complaint about me was he teaches trickery within the confines of the Constitution. And I said, you could let him know. I said, thank you. There is no trickery. Here are the rules. Here is how you work within the rules. I know it sounds crazy because you don't know what the rules are. But once I explain the rules and show you how the game is played legally, you have the Constitution to fall back on. So as long as you're playing, and I'm, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm an extremist, I'm certainly not, but I certainly believe in the Constitution. And I find that people who, you know, are anti-police think the Constitution shouldn't apply to them, or it's not a fair thing. But those are the rules we must play by.
Yeah. So, you know, I tell everyone, and there are a number of us, not only in the state of Florida, but across the country, that serve as constitutional sheriffs. And the Constitution has always been not only relevant, but vital to my life, to my career, certainly to our country, certainly to our freedoms. And certainly it's the thing that separates us from other countries, that gives our citizens freedoms and guarantees and rights. So, you know, what I want our team to do, in fact, what I demand our team does, is to work within the Constitution and the laws of the land. We get asked a lot of times, as sheriffs, what are you going to do if the feds come to take our guns? My answer is immediately, I'm going to hide all of mine, first of all. And secondly, I'm going to stand at your front door and tell them they're not coming here. The Constitution is very clear. It gives our citizens the right to bear arms, but it extends further than that. Every amendment in the Constitution is vital to the fabric of this great country. And so you're right. We work within the Constitution. We obey the laws ourselves, and we expect others to obey the law. So what the issue that a lot of people don't realize is there are people out there that don't obey the law. And those people are so widespread and so arrogant in their thumbs up at the law that they do things that give us the ability to take them to jail. They do things that give us the ability to, you know, follow the Constitution, follow the Supreme Court rulings, follow the court, you know, findings, and still be able to do our job and still be able to put bad people in jail. And so, you know, sometimes people say, well, you say you serve as a constitutional sheriff. Give me an example of what that means. And so I can give you an absolute example of it for me. The state of Florida a few years ago had an amendment to the Constitution on the ballot. And that amendment was for medical marijuana. I was one of the strongest opponents of it. I went around publicly speaking that I believed it wasn't about what they were purporting it to be. It was about being the tip of the spear for legalizing and having recreational marijuana come into our state. So I spoke against it. An overwhelming majority, in fact, almost 70% of the Florida citizens voted to make that an amendment to the Constitution, to make medical marijuana amendment to the Constitution. So my job at that point had been to try and keep it from happening because I believed in that. But the moment that the majority of our citizens changed that, and the moment the majority of our citizens made it part of our Constitution, my job then shifted to becoming helping implement it where it didn't negatively impact public safety. So you have to believe in all aspects of the Constitution if you're going to be a constitutionalist, and you have to support and defend every piece of it, even maybe if it's something you don't like.
I couldn't agree more. Let me ask you this. Do you think you're directly or indirectly responsible for the soaring real estate prices in Florida, where you're saying this stuff and attracting people to live in areas like this where they feel safe?
So I'm going to say that I am blessed, and it's not me, it's our team, are blessed to be a part of causing the housing market to go through the roof in Brevard County. But the guy that deserves the credit for Florida is a guy by the name of Ron DeSantis, who is a kick-ass governor that I love watching what he's doing.
Even me am sometimes answering the call of the siren, which is Ron DeSantis. I've considered moving to Florida.
What we do, though, when people are moving to Florida, we meet them at the state line, and they have to sign that they'll never vote the way they did before, before they came to Florida. So we want everybody to move here, but if you had bad voting habits, leave them behind wherever it is you're moving from.
You know, contrary to popular belief, even though New Jersey is a Democratic state and that's where we're from, you'd be really hard pressed to find people who are, having those extreme left beliefs. Police in New Jersey are loved. I live it. I watch it. And sometimes these men and women forget it. But I'm telling you, like, it's a different world up here for cops versus maybe other parts of the country. Not only they love, but the brotherhood and the sisterhood here is very, very strong. We take care of one another in the Northeast like nowhere else.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, though, too, Florida doesn't hold the patent on that. New Jersey doesn't hold the patent on it. I guarantee if you went around the country and asked most citizens what they think of their cops, they love them. Yeah. They absolutely do. Again, it's that small vocal group of ankle biters that get all the attention from the negative media and are able to cause the ripples in the water they do. I tell our team they're nothing but a pebble in our shoe that we'll dump out on the path to success. That's all they are.
I was told recently that in Europe, they show the American media as comparable to Nazi propaganda and swaying the minds. That's how it's taught in like Amsterdam. I was just told this. And I said, that makes complete sense because people are just so, their minds are so easily malleable and molded on, you know, how are you not understanding the common sense behind this? Even some of our personnel, sometimes during the past few years that we've gone through, they look to me of like, what do you think? I go, is it really what they say it is? Are you going places and is it, or are we a little more harmonious than they think or they're portraying us to be? But they had people fooled. They had people convinced that we were the villains and the bad guys.
Oh, man, listen, there was a crew that came here under the pretense they were going to do a story about American policing. And it ended up being a hit piece on American policing. They went to different agencies across the country. And, you know, how bad we were because we had a vehicle that protected our SWAT teams when we went in, you know, how bad I was for having the wheel of fugitive and just, you know, how wrong that was. Again, those people make me die laughing. I mean, I literally just cracked up laughing in their face because the best thing about being sheriff is if your citizens don't like what you're doing, they can vote you out of office. And I always tell everybody, if you don't like it, don't vote for me, but I'm going to do what I need to do to protect those three C's.
What do you think? This goes back a little bit to how we started our conversation. What do you believe makes a good leader? And then I have a follow-up to that after you answer this.
There's so many different paths that we could go down with what makes you a good leader. But I always tell everybody that my greatest leadership quality is picking great people and getting out of their way. Understanding that I'm surrounded by an amazing team of men and women that are knocking it out of the park out there to keep people safe. Amazing command team that's really the spinal column of our agency. I'm the figurehead. They're the ones that are making the quick and necessary decisions to keep this agency and this community safe. We could go down that path. But if I had to say what makes a good leader, it's recognizing that you can learn just as much from a bad leader as you can a good leader. And oftentimes you learn more from a bad leader. Some of the greatest leadership thoughts that I got were from watching bad leaders lead people the wrong way, lead them to the wrong place. And so not all leaders are great leaders. And the best example of a leader that was a horrible leader is Adolf Hitler. That's as far as you got to look to see somebody that clearly had leadership ability, In fact, he led people to commit atrocities. So you can learn as much from a bad leader. In fact, you can learn more from a bad leader than you can a good leader.
What do you do when you catch wind and your organization is the top guy of bad leadership practices? How is that addressed? Because I often say, and this is, I'm not trying to dig too hard and, you know, serve anything that makes anybody uncomfortable. I don't want to do that. My point is, commonly we see that as we poll thousands and thousands of cops, everybody seems to have a problem with leadership. What I've seen through my career is top administration being aware that there is an issue somewhere in mid-level administration, but ignoring it. What do you think the resolution is to finding out or catching wind of a sergeant or a lieutenant or a corporal who is not leading appropriately? And however you want to dress that up, but not leading appropriately.
Yes. I'll give you examples. I believe that good leaders fix their mistakes. And so, unfortunately, in the 9 years that I've been sheriff, I've had a couple members of my command team, not a first line supervisor, not a mid-level supervisor, but literally members of people that were in my command team that I demoted. I took them out of command, put them back to their civil service rank because they weren't leading in the capacity. They weren't carrying the mission of the sheriff's office the level they needed to. So, I've done that with first line supervisors, midline supervisors all across the board. You owe it to, we have an agency of 1700 people. You owe it to the other 1699 to make sure that you're holding people accountable for their actions, regardless of what they wear on their lapel. So, I think you have to take action. If you've put somebody in a leadership role and they're not leading the right way, then a true leader will take them out of that role. Now, one of the things that I think we have to be cautious of is, are they not leading because we've never given them some assistance in becoming good leaders? Or are they not leading just because they are not wanting to lead? We do a leadership class for our sergeants and above. I teach that class. Why do I teach it? Because I want our leaders to know, A, where I stand on things, B, what motivates me to make the decisions I make, and C, what freedoms they have to make decisions. I tell our team all the time, make a damn decision. I didn't put stripes on you or lieutenant bars or a star on you so that you could hesitate and make a decision. Make them. If you made them with the good, right decision in mind and it's wrong, we'll fix it. We'll get to where we need to be. But I expect you to make decisions. So the step one is being able to say, I told you what I expected. So many times throughout law enforcement, we don't give people expectations. We don't give them training to meet those expectations. So we do that in our agency. And then how are they doing it? Sometimes somebody might need a tweak. Somebody might need something, maybe it's just their personality. And we either go, well, that's just their personality, but the decisions they're making are sound decisions. And then we try and work with them on that. Others, one of the things that I do in our thing is if I pass somebody over, so Dennis, if you're on the list and I pass you over for promotion through our contract, the top 10 people are eligible for me to pick. So if you're number two and I go pick number three, I bring you into my office and I tell you why I passed you over. I don't just leave you wondering. And then I tell you what I want you to do to be able to reach that promotional opportunity. And then we watch and see if they're doing it. We watch and see how they work to get to that next level.
I often find that a lot of police officers are really dissuaded and disheartened of this profession when they begin to discover that nepotism is a real thing in law enforcement. Sounds like Sheriff Wayne Ivey likes to pick his people and move them to appropriate positions and reward them on meritocracy. What's your position on nepotism, aka favoritism for those who are listening, versus meritocracy, where people are getting rewarded for the work that they're doing and they're being recognized for the hard work and being progressed forward as they should be?
So in our agency, the first line of supervision, and a lot of people always think of the first line of supervision as being a sergeant. That's the first promotable line of supervision. But for us, really, our supervisors that are really responsible, probably got the most value in training people, are our field training officers, our field training deputies. that are riding right there in that car with that person, trying to make sure they have the tools, the skill set they need to protect themselves and our community. So the field training deputies and corporals are those that are selected by the commander, those that are selected by the command team. There's no promotional opportunity or no promotional, you know, test or board or anything like that they go through. Sergeant is the first testable promotion in our agency. And so, you know, for our sergeants, what I'm looking at is who prepared themselves, who's worked in different capacities in the agency that brings a toolbox with them rather than a tool to be able to lead their team. Who's involved. A big thing for me is being involved in the community. I want our team to understand that it takes community to protect the community. And that goes a lot farther than just keeping your car from being burglarized. That goes into helping, you know, with different charities that are around. I want to see people that are stakeholders in our community. So, you know, I look at all those things, and then I take great counsel from our command team on who's ready, what we're seeing from them, what examples do they have, and then I make my selection to get them there. You know, in any law enforcement agency you go to, there are going to be those that are married, which really fits into that nepotism thing, or that's the cousin or whatever. None of that buys anything here. What buys you here is getting the job done of protecting our community, putting bad people in jail, doing it right, doing it professionally. And so, you know, the meritorious side of this is I want people that are going to represent our agency well. I want people that are going to train the people they're responsible for to one day take their job as they move to the next level or they move to retirement. So that's what gets you promoted in our agency. There's no favoritism here. In fact, if you're doing it right, and this is sad to say, but if you're doing it right, when you go to promote somebody that you're close with, you should have to second guess yourself to make sure that people aren't going to say, oh, well, he only got that because he was friends with the sheriff, or he only got that. So it almost becomes counterproductive to them. But if you're doing it right, you're going to pick the best people regardless of who they are.
I've heard so many wonderful things, and I'm outspoken not to challenge administrations or challenge patrol or challenge anything anybody wants to do. The question I usually ask is, do you want to see it become better, or do you want us to stay the status quo? I've never understood law enforcement, how the world continues to evolve, grow, and change, and some law enforcement personnel think it's 1987 still. Right. Something that I've offered to people is I find it interesting that as a patrol officer, you typically get your quarterly or semi-annually or annual review. However, once you make it to a leadership position, you're off the hook, right? We're going to hold you accountable as a patrolman, but as soon as you're up to sergeant and above, nobody is going to question anything you do, whether it's right or wrong or good or indifferent. And that's kind of why I asked you the question before, how do you deal with somebody who's not performing in a leadership position?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we're watching our supervisors all the time. We put a lot of emphasis on our commands. The way our patrol side of the house is set up, we have five precincts. Each one of those has a commander and then lieutenants and sergeants beneath them. But we rely on them to tell us who's making it. You know, a great tool for law enforcement is the probation period of a new supervisor. When you meet that next level, whether you just made sergeant or you just made lieutenant, there's a year window there that I get to evaluate your performance, and I get to decide if you're going to make that job, you know, make that jump and be that leader I need. If people aren't using that, and if they're not using their FTO programs in bringing in deputies, then they don't have a real FTO program, and they don't have a probationary period. They have a rubber stamp. Unfortunately, there are a couple in our agency that I've had to go to, and it hurts, man. It hurts deep in me that I've had to go to and say, hey, man, you're not going to make your probation. Let's live to fight another day. Let's take a step back. Let's get you some training that will get you ready the next time you're on this list. And let's get you in a position where you can learn the tools you need. And it's hard, man. It's tough to.
Are you gonna? I know what it's like to be the boss, Sheriff. It's not easy.
Yeah. You know, take those sergeant stripes from somebody, or take those lieutenants, or even that command insignia. But again, you owe it to the other 1,699 members of the agency to do what's right. And that I think if you're not holding everybody from 1 to 1700 accountable for their actions, you're going to have bad morale. You are going to lose people. You are more importantly than anything else, putting people's lives at risk, both law enforcement and citizens.
Do you think the lower, and I don't want to say lower, but you know, in the hierarchy of promotions and positions and the paramilitary organizational chart of a law enforcement agency, do you think patrol and, you know, somewhere along those lines has a good opportunity or feels comfortable to voice feedback on what's working, what's not, which supervisor's not working, what other things are working in this community to try to help, you know, improve things? You know, here when I come to work, you know, and again, I don't have 1700 employees. I have 40 instructors and 6 in the Philippines that do our video editing work. But, you know, I often come in and I usually start things with, you guys, it's an open door. Like if there's something I'm not doing right, or, and we literally just take things that are issues and sit down and address them immediately. Right. And I think that I've created a dynamic and an environment of feeling safe to say that with knowing there's going to be no recourse from the boss and I'm going to find it offensive. As a matter of fact, I would find it offensive if you didn't tell me. What's your thoughts on something right. like that?
Well, yeah. So this is what I tell our team. The chain of command goes up. There's no chain of command downwards. So you very rarely find me at my office. You find me out on the street. You find me out with our patrol team. Nothing for me to climb in the car with a patrol deputy and go ride. I do a show.
Do they shit their pants when you go in the car with them?
You know, it's really funny because I think they look forward to it. I hope they look forward to it because they know I like to have fun. I like to chase bad people. And I want to be careful to frame when I say chase bad people. 60 years old, somebody's got to stay with the car. But, you know, other than that, but I love it. And so, you know, my team knows that, man, I'm out here slinging jokes. I'm having fun. I'm talking trash. We're picking on each other. When it's time to be respectful, they are. But other than that, man, we're having a good time and we love each other. And I love what they do. And I'm just, to be honest, I'm envious of what they do. I get to wear 8 stars on my collar. Big deal. They get to represent this agency each and every day to the citizens out there. So, you know, I sit in the car with them. I go to the precincts, sit in the break room with them. And I tell them, if I ask you how are things are going, don't bullshit me. Don't tell me things are going great if they're not. I want to know. And the other thing that I tell them is tell me your ideas, because the next great idea for the Brevard County Sheriff's Office is not coming out of this fat head of mine. It's going to come out of one of those deputies or corrections deputies or communications officers or the person that does our HR or IT. It's going to come out of their head. The problem is so many times that great idea gets squatted on by a sergeant or a lieutenant or a precinct commander that they don't like the idea. So I never get to decide if it's a great idea or not. And I'll give you a perfect example of that. We have a program here called Paws and Stripes College. We take rescue dogs. We have animal control. We take rescue dogs out of our shelter. And we train them to be child comfort dogs. So when a child's been the victim of a crime, that dog can help relax them. Before we started using these comfort dogs, in fact, we were the first agency in the country to ever pilot this initiative. Before we started using child comfort dogs, we were only getting 34% of the child victims to disclose to us what happened. Within a year's time of using this dog that we piloted with, we went from 34% disclosure of victimization to 81% disclosure of victimization. Now we take those dogs and we take them out of our shelter. Some of them have been near death. We train them to be child comfort dogs and we give them to police agencies across the country. Awesome. We don't charge them for them. We don't charge them for training. All you do is get your people here for a week of training and we provide the dog and the training for you. So where did that idea come from? And I'd love to tell you that Wayne Ivey is smart enough to come up with that. But it actually came from a guy by the name of Jesse Holton, who was an agent who walked in my office and told me he wanted to try it. He had talked to some others before about it, and nobody ever bid on it. They just kind of dismissed it. Guess what? We took that program in 2013. We started it, and it is life-changing. It is literally the win-wins of that program that this young man came up with are, A, We take dogs that were sometimes near death. We save their life. And we put them into roles where they will impact thousands and thousands of children in schools and everything else in their lifetime. We use inmates to train the dogs. So we're teaching the inmates a life skill. They go out and they get jobs at grooming salons and everything else. We impact victims, thousands and thousands of victims, and it doesn't cost the taxpayers a single dime. That's all out of one individual's head that had been shut down before he ever got to my door. So you got to listen to your people. You got to believe in them. You got to realize they're what makes the agency. You're just the person that's bragging on them.
I have two more questions. The first one's a cool one that I think a lot of people sometimes imagine the role that you play and them being in that role. What's it like to be the boss?
Ooh, so, you know, it's funny, you know, up until I became sheriff, I'd always worked for somebody else. And even when I was with FDLE, I was a supervisor, a resident agent in charge of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. But you still had a boss and you still had somebody that could shoot your decision down. And you still had somebody that could take your decision for it. The first thing I realized when I became sheriff is whatever we're doing is going to rest on my shoulders. So if it's a great idea, good. If it's a bad idea, I'm getting blamed for it. And so, you know, that's the first thing you realize. But I get asked a lot that if Governor DeSantis runs for president, would I run for governor? I get asked a lot to run for Congress when our current congressman doesn't run anymore. And I give them the same answer every day. And that is this: I've been a cop my whole life, man. That is all I've ever wanted to do. And been doing it 42 years now.
Wow.
And being sheriff is incredible. It is an incredible accomplishment that I never thought I would get to make. But it's not the being the deputy. It's not being the corrections deputy. Those are the real people out there that are making a difference, man. And so I think to answer that question, what's it like to be the boss? It's awesome, but it's more important to remember that I was once one of them and I'm still one of them, because that's all I want. All I want to do at the end of the day is for people to remember I was a good cop. That's all I want.
If you begin follow us on social media, you'll see some of the things that I hold up signs and we do all this different stuff. And one of the things I said is, I'll tell you one that you're going to love. And then I said, you know, humility is a rare trait in law enforcement, but a very powerful one. So the humility that I hear through this conversation, and, you know, I even myself, as I become more of a figure in law enforcement nationally, I really, really try to remain as humble. And I put that in my mind as much as possible to never, and I've made mistakes. You know, I tell people I'm a human being like everybody else. I have bad days. It's rare, but, you know, there are things about my life that you don't know. And on the surface, you think it's just a blast and it's a success and all these things. But here's another one you'll like. And we actually had somebody in this state who tried to challenge me on LinkedIn about this and then ran for the hills. But I held up a sign that said, "Bad admins are a criminal's best friend."
Sure.
And the quote underneath it was, "And the latter. So good admins are a criminal's worst nightmare." Rubbed people the wrong way, interestingly enough, which was kind of the point. I'm looking to get under people's skins to promote progression and change and speak about the truth. Here's my final thing for you. I read that you were recently appointed the Criminal Justice Standards and Training Commissioner. Is it a commissioner or is it the head of the commission? How's it work?
You're called a commissioner, but there are like 20 or 25 of you on the commission. So all of you are commissioners. And then there's a chair of the, but I'm just one of the commissioners. Recently was appointed by Governor DeSantis and I've actually been to one of the criminal justice standards and training things. They do 4 years. So I've been to one so far.
That's cool. You know, we have this vision as a company and myself as the founding person of this organization that we recognize that if we could just have better training, we can save more lives. And we're actually proving it. There's days and days we could sit down and talk and I could show you thousands of messages that have come back of we've saved kidnapped children. Matter of fact, the gentleman who was kidnapped by those three men in Florida and driven around where they emptied his bank accounts on Saturday, that wasn't your town, right? That wasn't your county. Okay. So on Saturday, I was having the company party at my house and we'd received the message that, hey, you know, this is my job and I wouldn't have gotten this and seen this had it not been for us taking your training. This class helped me save this man's life. So we're trying to, and it's just a relief to see somebody like you getting into this position, to understand that police training needs a complete overhaul. I know that the intention is correct, but the result is not a good thing. And we know that because everybody's told the same thing before they go to academy. I'm sure you heard this 42 years ago. Hey, kid, go to the academy. They're going to teach you nothing. You're going to learn a goddamn thing. And when you get out here, that's when you'll figure out how to do the job. You hit the streets. And then sometimes you get stuck with a field training officer who shows you how to do what? Get a half price egg sandwich, how to milk a job for 3.5 hours, how to do prisoner transports and avoid the radio as much as possible. So we're doing our best here to say to those who need the training, hey, this is what we think. This is what we have. We're not just complaining about it like everybody else. We are trying to find solutions to the issues. I can't even begin to quantify the amount of lives that I've had. I've had 14 guys face-to-face say to me, I was going to kill myself, but I didn't because of you, because of something you said. I wake up every morning and know that I have a big job to do, and I think I have a fair shot at actually trying to change things. Now I become a target of other organizations that do not like what the police are doing and what I'm about. What, as the commissioner now, are you guys looking at to try to improve police training in the state of Florida? Maybe even setting a role model or an example for the country.
So the first thing I would say is the curriculums for our academies, everything else, are oversight by not only the commission, but also the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. And I worked for FDLA for 20 years. And when you look at some of the things that are happening around the rest of the country, where the incidents that you know come to the national scene are happening, Florida's generally speaking not one of those places, because we put so much emphasis on the level of training, the type of training, the consistency. And that's a big word, consistency of training, so that everybody's getting the same training. The second thing, and I think one of the things that people need to be the most aware of, is how we bring somebody onto the job. If you recruit mediocre or you accept mediocre, the very best day of their life will be mediocrity. What we look for is the best of the best. You to come to work for the Brevard County Sheriff's Office, we are going to vet you like you've never been vetted before. We're going to interview your elementary school teachers, your neighbors, everything else. I want to recruit the best of the best. If I recruit the best of the best and they have an off day, I still get above average from them. So, you know, how you bring people into the fold is how you keep from having mistakes at the end of the fold. And so, you know, Florida does a good job at regulating standards for people to come in, regulating the training of what they're getting and the consistency of it. But here's the other mistake that a lot of leaders make. And I think these leaders need to really mirror check themselves. And this is my mantra. I told my command team this the very first day I became the sheriff of this agency. And it's simply this: I will never miss the opportunity to get rid of a subpar employee. I won't. If you are subpar and you've risen to the level that I can fire you, I will fire you. And you and I both know how much it takes to rise to the level where you can terminate somebody today. By the same measure, I'll never miss the opportunity to save a valued employee, to somebody that just made a true, genuine mistake and that has been a great asset for our agency. And so the first one, never missing the opportunity to get rid of a subpar, I owe it to the other 1,699 members of the agency. The second one, I owe it to the 1,700 members of the agency to try and save one of them if they've made a true legitimate mistake. But if you do those things, you maintain and protect this badge. You protect the shine of this badge by holding people accountable, just like we're took an oath to do out here on the street.
Well, this has been great. I'm hoping that you had a good time here.
I did, man. A lot of insight and thought, and I love your energy. I love your enthusiasm, man.
Listen, likewise. Can I call you a friend of mine? Can I tell people we're friends?
Absolutely.
All right, this is great. So if you see me, don't like if I'm like, hey, sheriff, and you're like, wait, I won't find it offensive, but once it clicks and I whisper in your ear who I am, just say, oh, yeah, I know, yeah, I remember. we're doing great things throughout the country. We are in Florida. And if you ever need anything from us as an organization, because any good leader knows that they might have to look beyond the walls of their organization, and namely, I'm talking about the commission of the police training and standards. We'd love to help. And that's not me saying to you, I need your money. That's me saying, I care enough to say, here's what we've come up with. Maybe you guys can use it. And something as simple as beginning to implement more thought into how we approach police vehicles and making a pass, vehicles that we've stopped and doing passenger side approaches and not thumbprinting trunks and giving our positions away. These are the things that we're sharing with the world. I think that's why we've, you know, really spoken to the hearts and souls. Sometimes at first people say, oh, these guys, you know, this guy's, and then they go, wait a second. Actually, he was right there. That was, I'm not here for my benefit. I guess some of the collateral I get off of the work that I do, it's fun. And it also sucks. And you know that at times that sometimes it's fun to be the guy that people want to take pictures with. And sometimes it sucks that you're the target of people coming after you. It ebbs and flows.
It does. And I always tell everybody, if you're not doing your job, if everybody likes you, you're not doing it. And there are those that love what we do. There are those that don't. But at the end of the day, I believe in the man in the mirror test. I got to be able to look the man in the mirror and tell him that I'm proud of what I see. I may not like this. like to have a little bit thinner version of this. But as far as what we do and how we do it with this agency, look, man, I'm telling you, brother, and this is not a dig on any other agency, but I am surrounded by the best team in the world. They make me look good. And we're surrounded by the best community in the world that give us the ability and actually demand that we keep them safe.
If there's anything I can do for you, any thoughts, an issue you come across, we got some of the most talented people at this organization in the business. And if you like proactivity, oof, we got the guys.
All right, man. I'm going to take
you up. Blow your mind.
Thank you, Dan.
Sheriff, have a wonderful summer. And I will consider moving to your county after this conversation.
We'll take
it's a pleasure meeting you, Wayne. Thank you so much.
That's good.
Yeah, have a good one.